With African brands making strides across the continent and globally, I find out how this can be improved and get a sense of some overarching trends. In this episode, Tebe Ikalafeng, who's the CEO and founder of the Brand Leadership Group, as well as the founder and chairman of Brand Africa, joins me to share some of his findings over the past 13 years.
So African brands are more transformative in a way. Now, if you contrast that with the brands that are going out of the continent, brands like Discovery, for example, with their vitality. So those brands are typically brands which are in the financial services area, in the particularly in the financial services area, actually, and in the scientific area. The Sasols, for example, which is one of the global South African brands. The Sepis, which are global South African brands.
He and his team have been studying the growth and evolution of African and global brands in Africa as part of the Top 100 Most Admired Brands in Africa initiative. He shares some of his observations on the challenges faced by brands expanding across the African continent.
So innovative brands will move out of the continent also easy. I think for brands to move out of the continent, they should be able to also transform lives.
We also discuss the successes of challenger brands such as Batu, Drip, Makosa, and many others that are making strides in Africa and beyond. Keep listening for some actionable brand, marketing, and communication insights to help grow your brand in Africa and beyond. Please subscribe to The Lead Creative wherever you get your podcasts. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show and please share and subscribe. Tebe, what a pleasure to have you on the show with us. I've been looking forward to this and I've been wanting to talk to you for a while. I've been following your work. So it's great that we could actually get talking.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the invitation, Mongezi.
Tebe, just to start off, since you launched the Brand Africa report in 2010, you've been instrumental, of course, in changing the perceptions of brands in Africa across not just the continent, but the world and in countries within the continent itself. Can you talk us through what you've seen since you've launched the report, what changes you've seen over time in the past 13 years?
Thank you so much for that question. Now, well, you know, when I launched the report first time, matter of fact, let me go to the launch of Brand Africa itself. When I launched Brand Africa, I thought it would be a platform for us as Africans to talk about the African brand, about how to move the continent forward, how to create the common story for Africa, to have a central idea of what it means to be an African. And then I realized after year one and two that all we were doing was just talk. And we weren't making any progress. There was nothing tangible. We were just talking about the idea and there was no ownership of anything or something that guides the conversation. So by the second year, I then said, let us launch a report on the state of brands in the continent. And at that stage, we only did 11 countries. And out of the 11 countries, we established non-African brands were dominating the continent. And that, at that stage, because it was just a limited sample, I think it was like 30 African and 70 non-African. So it was quite interesting. And it was a bit of an eye-opener. And I said, oh, my goodness. And, of course, the stalwart brands were always coming up already from that time. MTN was a strong brand from the continent, from South Africa. Dangote from Nigeria. So the pillars of the continent, the economic hubs of the continent, Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya, were producing the big brands. So over the last 13 years, the status quo has remained the same. I mean, we've gone from 11 countries to 30 countries, which cover North Africa, East Africa, South Africa, West Africa, Central Africa. And the story is consistent, and it's so consistent now, it's sort of settled at 20% of the brands that Africans admire are non-African. Should I say only 20% of the brands that Africans admire are non-African. And the countries which are driving that African brand story, South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya and Ethiopia with their strong brand, Ethiopian Airways, and Kenya with a strong brand, Safaricom, Nigeria with a strong brand, Dangote in South Africa with MTN. So those brands, if you will, are the story of Africa. They speak to entrepreneurial, they speak to connectivity, and they speak to industrialization. So that's what we're seeing in the last 13 years.
Those are really great observations and insights over the past couple of years. And I think it's very inspiring to see the change from, I suppose, global brands to African brands. There's something else that I've observed in the past 2-3 years in the reports itself. I mean, you mentioned MTN, you mentioned Dangote. These are big brands that have been around not for as long as some of the brands on the list, but they've been around for a long time now when you think about how long, you know, brands last of late. But one of the things that I noticed in the past 2-3 years, just to go back to that, is this emergence of challenger brands that haven't been around for 10 or more years, you know, and I'm talking about brands like Drip, that I've been seeing there, and a few others. In your view, what has changed over the years in our consciousness as the African consumer, as Africans, as customers, that we now gravitate more towards African brands rather than global ones, and more so challenger African brands?
What a surprise to us as well when we saw Drip and Batu on the list. And those are two South African brands which happen to be primarily South African. But because of the power of technology, the power of digital to break down barriers, those brands are also flowing into the rest of the continent. There's a consciousness about those brands because those brands have not been necessarily quiet. They've been quite vocal in how they tell their story. So I think what's been happening a lot is this consciousness about made in Africa. So over the years, as we've been driving the narrative of it's time for Africa, it's Africa, your time is now, I'm an African or I'm Africa. So you're beginning to see now an excitement about guys, we need to start consuming made in Africa. And you know, with initiatives like the Africa Free Trade Continental Free Trade Area, which aims to open up the barriers and to drive intra-Africa trade movement of goods from intra-Africa, you begin to see that there's a lot of excitement, a lot of opportunities for African brands to grow. But you're also seeing the good old African entrepreneurial spirit, because Africans by nature, we're entrepreneurial, we are adaptive, we are resilient, we are innovative. That's who we are as a people generally. So you're beginning to see a lot of that, particularly in the apparel area, apparel and footwear area. If you go into that space, I mean, whether it's Makossas of South Africa or Motions of Rwanda, or even in Nigeria, as far as Nigeria, as you look at ethnic Africa. So there's a lot of those young brands, particularly in the apparel area, which are coming up. But then if you go to places like Zambia, Tanzania, you're also seeing industrial brands. So you're seeing food brands are coming up. Of course, the other countries, Azam, for example, in Tanzania is a big brand in that part of the world. So what you're seeing now, you are seeing Africans asserting themselves, and Africans are saying that, but why can't we create these products? I mean, if you think about our palates, for example, in food, you think about the jollofs of West Africa, that now you're seeing jollof brands coming up in the continent. Of course, with fashion, as I've said, this love of made in Africa, self-expression, trying to identify with the continent. So brands which have that African narrative in them are also beginning to rise. And you begin to see them in time. And some of them, you know, if you go into African brands, you're going to begin to see the GTPs, of the world, the Vlisco's of the world. They're not necessarily African, but they're inspired by Africa. Because we all thought Vlisco is African, but it's from Holland. But it's just only found in Africa. But yes, I think to me it's excitement about the continent, the yearning for self-identity and for products which reflect who we are and are adapted to our tastes.
You mentioned the Africa Free Trade Area, and I want to just talk to that a little bit in terms of just the marketing, the communication, and this brand exchange that occurs as a result of that. Because a lot of the time we see Western brands coming into Africa, not so much African brands going out. And I want to talk to that in a moment. But first, let's start with this Free Africa Trade Area and other initiatives that are coming up. In the past, I mean, in the past 13 years and looking to the future, are you seeing a lot of African brands almost having this cross-pollination across the continent, which is positive, which enables not just better trade, but better communication, better brand stories, a better and more inspiring story of Africa as a continent, as well as countries within the continent?
Well, if you look at the aims of the AfCFTA, the goals are to fast-track intra-Africa trade from 15% to 50%. Now, we've been trying to do this for so many years as a continent. Now we've given ourselves 7 years to catapult or to fast-track the intra-Africa trade. So if that's going to happen, if that's going to happen well, then it means we need to fast-track the creation of Made in Africa brands. Of course, the brands which are the non-African brands, the Cokes, or you name them, the Nokias, all from technology to food to anything to fashion. The international brands have got a head start on us. But one is hoping that what the AfCFTA will do will be a catalyst for Made in Africa brands. We're also hoping that we will learn from the likes of China, for example, which says these borders are ours. Let's close them a little bit and give our brands a bit of a chance, a head start, to be able to gain their footing, and then thereafter we can invite everybody else. So that's what I'm seeing with the AfCFTA. I mean, the idea was mooted by Kwame Nkrumah on 24th of May 1963, when he said that we need to create a common trade area for the continent, a common currency, a common communication network. So the blueprint was always there, although it was only formalized, I think, 2018, and then implemented 2020 with the opening of the secretariat in Ghana. And I think what you're seeing with His Excellency Mwene Wamkele is a concerted effort now to really fast-track the intra-Africa trade. It's a good initiative. It's a good move for the continent. But it will also, I think, it will inspire a lot more African brands to grow. It's an opportunity for African brands.
Now, looking a little bit further into this sort of same idea of this sort of brand cross-pollination in Africa and abroad, like I said, we're used to seeing, you know, we're used to getting global brands or international brands coming in and us adopting those international brands and everybody's happy. Not so much African brands going abroad. What have you observed, or what are some of your insights around African brands that make it abroad? Like, what's the common theme or common thread that you see in those brands?
So let me contrast first with the ones that are in Africa, the African brands. The one thing you're seeing about the African brands, whether it's an MTN, whether it is M-Pesa in Kenya, or whether it is Ethiopian Airways, whether it is Dangote, the common theme that you're seeing about those brands are enabler brands. They are brands which are transformative. You know, if you look at a brand like M-Pesa, which enabled access to financial services from 5% in 2006 to 70% in 2010. And right now, more than 50% of the economy of Kenya goes through M-Pesa, because it's made it easy for anybody, whether you're in Nairobi, the urban Nairobi or the rural Nakuru, to be able to transact, to be able to move money across. So our brands, African brands that are succeeding, are the brands which are transformative, they're transforming life, they're transforming economies, they're transforming a way of doing business. So if you look at them, Ethiopian Airways has done has made it easy now to move around the continent. I mean, Ethiopian has centered itself as the hub for the continent. It's a center of the continent. Anywhere you go, if you go through Ethiopia, you've got a connection to anywhere in the world. And MTN has enabled one to be able to communicate with anybody anywhere else in the world. And what Dangote has done with the cement brand, for example, is enabled Africans to be able to build their futures. So African brands are more transformative. in a way. Now, if you contrast that with the brands that are going out of the continent, brands like Discovery, for example, with their Vitality. So those brands are typically brands which are in the financial services area, in the finance, particularly in the financial services area, actually, and in the scientific area, the Sasols, the technologies, scientific area like that, the Sasols, for example, which is one of the global South African brands, the Sepis, which are global South African brands. And you look at Discovery's Vitality, which you can find in the US, in the UK. And those brands are able to move out of the continent easily because generally you are not carrying anything. You're just carrying an idea and you can take it out there. And the ideas have been very, very innovative. So innovative brands will move out of the continent also easy. I think for brands to move out of the continent, they should be able to also transform lives. I mean, Discovery is also a transformative brand. If you think about it, I mean, we've had many other brands like the De Beers, for example, which was one of the earlier global brands from the continent, and the brands like Standard Bank used to operate internationally as well. So as Old Mutual used to be based in London, but now what you're also beginning to see is even those African brands are also now thinking about being home. You look at Botswana, for example, which is the partnership between the Beers and the Botswana. They brought back the entire value chain back to Botswana to supply the world. They said, why should it be outside of the continent to supply the world? If it comes from the continent, let's create from the continent.
This episode is sponsored by the digitally led customer experience agency, Roger Wilco. For all your customer experience, digital marketing, and web development needs, go to rogerwilco.co.za or rogerwilco.co.uk. You can also download the South African CX report and the Township CX report directly from their website, free of charge. Don't we all love something free every now and again, especially with insights, right?
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
I get that. And I think it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense when you start thinking about, I suppose, how much positive change we need on the continent and how much these transformative brands, as you put it, contribute to this positive change. That said, though, there are other, I guess, not so positive stories, and I think out of these not so positive stories, I just want to get a sense of, in terms of your observation, where these brands are getting it wrong. There are countless stories of brands expanding from one part of the continent to another and not making it. And these are, in some instances, big brands, big and small brands. More so, big brand stories tend to make it onto the news. Where do they get it wrong? And how can we improve, or how can they improve around these parts?
I'm imagining you're talking about brands like Woolworths, for example, which went to Nigeria and did not succeed. Shoprite, which is closing businesses in other parts of the continent. So I think the challenge for those, for any brand, not necessarily those only, the challenge for any brand is as soon as you leave your domestic, your home ground, you should live with the essence of the brand, but you should not be imposing yourself in the other countries. You should be able to adapt to the countries where you're going to. So if you look at, from what I've heard about the Woolworths and the Shoprites of the world, their challenges in, for example, in Nigeria would be the supply chain. What I've heard is, for example, that if you want to source everything out of South Africa because you want to keep the brand consistent, if you will, the products are consistent, then becomes a bit of a problem for you to becomes costlier to supply in those markets. The other ones I've heard is also is if you've got similar products that you are similar inputs that you can source in the country where you are, why do you want to get it from South Africa? So it becomes now a bit of a political battle, if you will. And the third one I've heard as well is observed is the issue of currency. of these companies, these brands are going to the part of the world and they cannot externalize or they cannot repatriate their profits and all those. So then it becomes a bit of a difficult situation for them. Why do business in those countries? But I think it's those are generally some of the issues. The issues are either adapting to the country from a product, from a taste, from understanding. Because when you move a product anywhere else, you need to understand. Is the story the same? Can I tell the same story here as I do back home? Will that story resonate in this country? Or how do I adapt my story? Will the packaging of my story, of my brand, of my product, will it resonate in this country? Will the symbolism that I use, will it resonate in this country? So those are sort of the intrinsics of a product or a brand or a brand story, if you will. But then there's a business part of it as well, from a currency, as I've said, from supply chain management and all those. So there's many factors which affect whether a brand is successful or not successful in any country.
That makes perfect sense. In some instances, or at least in some conversations I've had, there's this thinking, or at least this logic that says sometimes it's missing the cultural nuances in those countries. So exporting your brand, but not embracing the cultural difference or the difference that you meet with as a brand in another part of the continent. Have you found that to be true or not?
And that's what I meant when I said that you have to adapt your story. That's what I said. Adapt your story because let's say, for example, let me use it's an international brand, but it will help me explain the story better. So when Coca-Cola had their Share campaign, which you're quite familiar with perhaps, where they used to have names on the bottles, when they had their Share campaign, in South Africa, it was pretty much a little bit like it was where it originated, which is Australia. But when you went to a country like Ghana, it wasn't the same. In Ghana, they went a little bit into the culture. They gave the names. They decided not to name it Monge Zitebe and all those. They said, in Ghana, the culture is to have a day name. And they put a day name on each different bottle and explained the characteristics or the attributes of that particular day name. And that went wild. People loved them because they're like, oh, this brand understands my culture, understands my story.
Right.
So there's an adaptation to the culture. To the culture of the country. I'll use Coke again as an example. When Coke arrived in Morocco and the roads were quite narrow and people were using donkeys, they used to move in trucks, pallets of trucks. But when they got to Morocco, they understood if we're going to succeed here, we need to move smaller pallets, we need to put them on donkeys so they were able to go through the small streets. So sometimes you adapt to culture, you adapt to the circumstances, sometimes you adapt to the taste. If you look at, for example, the KFC, when they sell KFC in West Africa, they sell it with rice. Here they sell it with rice, and they probably make it hotter. Whereas when they sell it here, they sell it with bread and chips. You adapt to the taste of the countries. Of course, the same story will apply to an African brand. I mean, so far the African brands which have been moving around the continent have been less edible brands, have been more, like the MTNs. So what have the MTNs of the world done? They've adapted to the story of the country. And they said, well, if I'm going to go to Nigeria and music is a big thing in Nigeria or fashion is a big thing in Nigeria, then I must use those platforms to tell my story. And if you go to a country like Ghana, if you are Vodafone or Vodacom, then you have to adapt to Kenya rather. You'll understand that they use a mixture of languages, Kiswahili and English. And if you go to a country like Ethiopia, you also understand that it's probably going to be holy Amharic. So you constantly have to adapt your story.
I've noticed when I follow you a lot on social media, of course, and I've noticed that you seek out and actively support African brands. So you absolutely walk the talk. Can you tell me a little bit about how you choose the brands that stick out to you, or what brands kind of stick out to you, or what a brand needs to do? Because you are rooted in Africa, you've got a global palette because you travel so much and you experience and explore so much I'm imagining that brands need to stick out to you in that sort of way. Is that true? How do the ones that stick out to you kind of make it onto your radar?
Well, I mean, you're correct that I've traveled. You're correct that I've got access to multiple brands, whether it's non-international or, I mean, whether it's non-African or African brands, and I consume them all. But what I choose to celebrate, I choose to celebrate the brands which are made in the continent. Because I think I've realized over time as well that every post I make, it's a statement. Every post I make, I'm advancing the African story. I'm advancing the African narrative. So whenever I arrive in any country, I try and understand the country well. Even if I've been to the country multiple times, I still try and understand where's the new food, where's the new eatery, where's the new places to hang out, where is the new clothes, who's the new designers, who are moving the design arc. So that's what I seek. And the ones that stick to me are the ones that deliver a story that is rooted in the country or the continent, but they deliver to the world standard. So because I don't have to support you just because you're African. I have to support you because, yes, you're African, but most importantly also because you deliver, if not equal to, but as well, if not as well, or maybe even better than the world standard.
Right. So Tebe, for brands big and small that want to make it on the continent, you've shared a lot already. So without necessarily going back to what you've already shared, like adaptability, understanding the culture and the nuances, supply chains and all of these things that you've just shared, what would your advice be on how these brands what they should do, how they should think, and what their approach should be on making it on the continent, both big and small, especially the smaller ones?
I think big or small, every brand story starts with a simple thing. It starts with having good insights about who you are, having good insights about where you are, what defines you, and then creating a narrative, a story for you. What is your brand? What does it stand for? What makes it different from everywhere else? And then when you deliver your brand, that's when you now begin to adapt it to where you are delivering it to. And it could be even in your country, even your own country, when you deliver the brand, then you should say, but if I'm speaking to young people, if I'm speaking to students, if I'm speaking to adults, because it's adaptation. So how do I adapt a thing? But the one thing that doesn't change is that clarity that you begin with, the clarity that says, this is my brand, this is the difference it makes in anybody who consumes it.
What are some of the overarching trends that you're following at the moment that are driving growth across the continent?
Well, I mean, the things that are driving the growth around the continent are most definitely technology. I mean, Africans are really pushing the boundaries when it comes to technology. So now I know there's ChatGPT, which is not necessarily African, but if you go throughout the continent, if you go particularly to West Africa, you're going to see how they are using mobile money better than anybody else. You're going to see how they're using technology better than anybody else. You're going to see how, as well, not just in North Africa, not just West Africa, also across the continent, how music is becoming the vehicle to tell African stories. Music is, I mean, you look at the Burna Boys of the world driving the African story. You're looking at from a piano from South Africa traveling the continent. So you're beginning to see the harmonization of African cultures, if you will, and the pursuits of fintech or technology and finance. So to me, those are probably the two biggest things from a culture perspective: music, and also identity in terms of who we are, how we express ourselves, and then from a delivery perspective, fintech. So to me, those are probably the two biggest things that I'm observing across the continent from wherever I go.
You're also a regular contributor on global platforms such as the World Economic Forum, where you, of course, you know, fly the flag for Africa and many other global forums. What do you commonly find to be some of the most unexploited areas for brands, business and marketing by African businesses?
Well, you know, I was in WEF now recently, and yes, we took South Africa to WEF. And in delivering the South African story to WEF, we truly Africanized. They say that they've never seen such an African experience in their entire WEF history, because we brought in South African artists, we brought in South African iconography, we brought in a South African chef, we brought in South African decor, South African beads, and all those things. And when I left that day, that week from Davos, I said to myself, the big mistake that we've always made as Africans is we have always underestimated or undermined who we are and what makes us different. And we forget that we cannot compete with Japan on being Japanese, with Italy on being Italian, or French on being French. But what where we will beat them is how to be African. Because how to be African is our strength. How to be African is our differentiation. And what I'm seeing a lot is too few of us assert who we are in these global platforms. When we go out into the rest of the world, we want to fit in instead of standing out. And we forget that the winners always stand out and they never fit in.
Would it be fair then to say that when we show ourselves to the world, we don't take our essence with us, our African essence truly with us into those spaces, which is precisely what you've said makes us unique and makes us who we are?
Yes, a lot of times we want to blend in. A lot of times we apologize for who we are. A lot of times we apologize for the fact that if I'm in France, I don't have a good French accent. I apologize that if I'm in Japan, I can't speak Japanese well. Or we apologize that we're in Sweden, we can't speak Swedish well. Instead of noticing the countries of the world, like the French never apologize for speaking English badly because they are not English. And the Italians never apologize for speaking French badly because they're not French. So a lot of us, we think as Africans, I think it's Ngugi wa Thiong'o said it, from Kenya, and he said, the person who can speak the other language well, and his mother tongue not as well, is still enslaved. Because he says a lot of us are pretty much enslaved because we think that adopting and immersing and transforming ourselves into the other makes us better, but it doesn't. It actually weakens us because it takes away the strength of who we are. Because the strength of who we are is our differentiation, it's our culture, it's our language, it's our clothes, it's how we behave, it's our exuberance, it's who we are as Africans, it's our strength.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
Now, as you've rightfully said, you've been contributing to WEF for a long time and these other platforms. Why is it now, after all these years, that we landed as South Africa, we landed on this insight when we didn't all along? Like, what was different about now that led to this insight and led to, of course, this insight landing so well with the global community?
I think, to be fair, this time we were given the opportunity to present South Africa. In the past, South Africa was just participating. But in this instance, we were given the chance to showcase, to host the event. And when we looked at what other countries did, and we said, you know, yeah, we can see other countries try to show their culture, but we don't want to show our culture. We want to celebrate our culture. We want our culture to be there, to be embedded. And I mean, and I'm not saying it because I was leading the work, but I mean, it was a team effort between us, South African Multi-Choice, Brands African Multi-Choice, my team, to ensure that we deliver a truly South African experience. But then also in the many instances all the time, you know, I met a friend there and I was dressed in a Rwandan suit. And he said to me, oh my goodness, my wife discouraged me from wearing my African suit. Now look at me. Now I'm looking like all Western. And look at you, Tim. As always, you arrive looking African regal. And I said, but you shouldn't have listened to your wife. You should have listened to your soul. You're an African, so you pitch up here. So part of what we need to do is we shouldn't wait for the invitation or the opportunity. Me, when I get invited anywhere else, when they say formal, to me it means African. When they say business, to me it means African. When they say casual, then I treat everything else of the rest of the world as casual. I wear their clothes, their shoes, their food as casual. But when they say it will be a formal event, then I really look formal African. I mean, I pitched up at an event in London. It was a black tie. It's probably one of my most iconic pictures because it's an event in London and everybody is dressed in a black tie, tuxedo and a white shirt, and I'm dressed in a kente, almost similar round neck kente top, and it was the funniest thing because it happened to be an all male table, and I was in one, and I stood out like an African in that group, which is who we are. We stand out as Africans. The way Obasanjo, when he's invited, during his time when he was president of Nigeria, when he's invited to the G20, the G8, to all these global forums, he always used to look like Obasanjo from Nigeria. And I think his fellow Kuti once said, he gave his children Yoruba names for an important reason. And he said, they may not live in Nigeria, they may not spend their lives, their most of the time in Nigeria, but wherever they go in the world, when they are doing well, and they mention the name and they say, Femi Kute just won a Grammy, he says that honor comes back to Nigeria, because the name Femi Kute is a Nigerian name. So it's how we are, how we present ourselves in the world. We don't need a permission, we don't need an invitation. We just need to be who we are all times.
No, that's really, I think that wraps up our conversation nicely, because I think it comes back to this idea that one of the things that hold us back in the rest of the world and even in the continent is that we think that our story, from the individual story to the brand story to the business story that we want to tell, which is what we're talking about today, is not isn't worth showing up as African with that story. Does that distill it the way that you've been describing it, or is there something more that comes to mind?
I think is Olajuwon, the great Houston, Nigerian Houston center, always used to say, says the greatest thing that ever happened to me is to be born in Africa. Or like Kwame Nkrumah said, he says, I'm an African, not because I was born in Africa, because Africa was born in me. So if you are Africa, then you must show up as Africa wherever you go, because that is your distinction.
And how does that, just to bring it back to the brand marketing and communications message, how does that translate in how some African brands that have made it globally and made it across the continent, how does that translate well in the thread of who they are and how they've succeeded?
See, when the French sell their champagne, and they call it Veuve Le Clicquot, they don't need to say anything else. It's French. And so when the Italian sell their story and they say made in Parmesan, made in Italy, that tells their story. So part of, from a branding perspective, is to never ever be apologetic and never ever to be ashamed of telling a story. If you look at the story of Maxhosa, the brand, for example, when we were working with the Maxhosa brand, and I said to them, take out the word Laduma and just replace it with Africa, so that when they see the name Maxhosa, they must know Maxhosa as Africa. They must have a location of where this brand comes from. I think that must be one of the most transformational changes to the brand. It was so small, but it was so huge, because from there on, the brand just exploded. And because it now took on not a name of somebody from Eastern Cape, it now became a representation of the African story.
Thank you very much. I think that closes it off nicely, that you must be a true representation of the African story wherever you go.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Mzee. And I wish you well with the program. And please keep telling these stories because, you know, it takes one story at a time to build the great story of Africa. As Chinua Achebe says, until the lion learns how to tell its story, tales of the hunter will always be glorified. This is us, the lions, telling our story. Well done, lion.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.